This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, in for Jen White. A motel in Missouri is an unlikely setting for a story that connects the world's wealthiest men with some of the world's most powerful people. The FBI is now investigating the deaths of two former mining executives. Both had held senior positions in a business that's now at the center of a huge bribery and fraud investigation. The two were in the middle of a cross-country road trip in 2015 when they were found dead in Springfield, Missouri. Local police said at the time that the cause of death was cerebral malaria. We now know that wasn't true. It's one of the many alarming revelations in the new book called Kleptopia: How Dirty Money is Conquering the World. It's written by the award-winning author Tom Burgess, who joins us on the line from London. Tom, welcome to 1A.
Hello, Sasha. It's an absolute pleasure.
Let's begin with a definition, Tom. Tell us, what is a kleptocrat?
Kleptocrat is someone who rules through corruption. So there's a very simple contrast. In democracy, we hope, at least, that we have a contract between the rulers and the ruled, where we give them the privilege of power and they advance our collective interests. A kleptocrat operates on the opposite premise, that their task is to seize power for themselves and their cabal, to drain wealth, resources and influence away from the many to the few. And then, crucially, and this is about to be put to the test, I fear, in the US, to maintain that power at all costs.
Now, before we get into the details that I mentioned at the top about the deaths in Missouri, I want to start in Washington with the nexus that you write about between some of these money men, in particular Felix Sater, and President Trump. Remind us, who is Felix Sater?
So Felix Sater is one of the most colorful of Donald Trump's associates. Born in Russia, grew up in Brooklyn, along with a lot of Russian emigres, son of a convicted criminal from Russia. He grew up and got into Wall Street. Then he stabbed someone in the face with a margarita glass and went to jail and had to start putting his financial skills to criminal uses. He worked on a pump and dump scheme, a kind of stock fraud. Mm-hmm. Before he got caught, actually, he got out of that, ran off to Russia. And in Russia, the story goes, he was recruited for US intelligence and started to feed information that he was able to access somehow in Russia back to his American handlers. And this essentially got him off the hook. So when he was exposed as a fraudster, it was his protection by the CIA and then later by the FBI that allowed him to carry on living this life, operating deep, deep in the world of dirty money. And he makes the acquaintance in around the turn of the century with a man who tries to present himself to the world as a tycoon, as a successful entrepreneur, but is actually just a hopeless businessman who's lost his daddy's money and who keeps going bankrupt, by the name of Donald J. Trump. Hmm. Trump is about to set off on his career as the kind of ersatz businessman of The Apprentice. And Felix Sater is the man who can connect him to money that is all too keen to find its way into the US, and especially into US real estate. And that's money from the world's most powerful and terrifying kleptocracies. Mm. Money that is captured by oligarchs and other businessmen close to the dictators who rule those places, especially in the former Soviet Union. And it flows out of there seeking the safety of the rule of law nations. And when you look at the big projects that sustained Donald Trump before I guess he was dreaming of being president before anyone else dreamt of him being president. The Trump Panama, the Trump Soho, the Trump Toronto. In secret, these are all vehicles for moving money that starts deep, deep in these kleptocracies. And when he suddenly becomes president, he is a creature of that world, of the global kleptopia, not of the democratic system. And when you start to look at his allies and how he behaves in office, yeah, that's how he can understand him.
Well, President Trump also maintains that his real estate business has always been above board. Why does real estate come up time and time again as a way to launder dirty money?
It's a good question for two reasons. The first is, why does dirty money want to get out of kleptocracies and into democracies in the first place? And that's because the kleptocrats, once, before globalization accelerated, kleptocrats operated largely in their home country, in Congo, in Kazakhstan, in Venezuela, wherever it might be, yeah, they'd have some Swiss bank accounts. But as globalization has accelerated, as multinational corporations have grown and grown and grown, and as the financial secrecy system has become bigger and bigger and bigger, these kleptocrats have become connected. And they've hired lobbyists, enablers, estate agents, bankers in the West. Why do they want them in the West? Because while they can loot in lawlessness, and lawlessness is crucial for them to be able to hold power and enrich themselves, what's vital for them as well is to stash that loot somewhere safe. It doesn't get any safer than the US. Now, after 9/11, with the Patriot Act, in theory, it became much, much harder to move shifty money, secret money into the US.
Okay.
That was because of all the concerns about Al-Qaeda's funding moving into the US. And that made it harder to move money through banks. But the lobbyists for the real estate industry, they said, hang on a second, we don't want any of this transparency in our industry. And they got an exemption from the Patriot Act. And that means that you can put as much money as you like into US real estate with next to no questions. And that is exactly the money that sustained Donald Trump for 15 years.
Let's stick with Felix Sater and President Trump for a bit longer. Sater is a Russian-born former business associate of President Trump, as you heard Tom mention. He served time for assault, but he was helping the Trump organization push for a new Trump Tower in Moscow. Now, in 2013, BBC reporter John Sweeney pressed Donald Trump on this connection. The president abruptly walked out of the interview after giving this response.
Well, first of all, we were not the developer there. That was a licensing deal.
Much but your name's Felix. On it, Mr. Trump.
Excuse me, but I don't know. You're telling me things that I don't even know about. I mean, you're telling me about Felix Sater. I know who he is.
But for a year, you stayed in bed with Felix Sater, and he was connected with the mafia.
Again, John, maybe you're thick, but when you have a signed contract, you can't, in this country, just break it.
And Tom, this goes a bit further from some of the comments you were making a moment ago, but tell us what that exchange from before he was president, tell us about the way he's gone on to now act as commander in chief.
Yeah, you're right on the money there. Trump is, he has been sustained by dirty money. One of the finance people who worked on his projects told me that the strategy that Trump employed, and he was employing it there in that exchange with Sweeney, was willful obliviousness. So he sets up a business system that means he can rent out his name and bring in millions upon millions. The millions are still coming in while being able to turn a blind eye to the sources of this money. And you're exactly right. As president, he's continued to operate as a product of that world. Look around at Trump's friends in high office, Putin, Mohammed bin Salman, even the Kim dynasty in North Korea. These are among the world's greatest and most terrifying kleptocrats. In North Korea, they have a branch of the government called Office 39 that's devoted to breaking sanctions against North Korea and dealing in foreign business interests, including slavery. Putin, his best friend, is a cellist worth $2 billion. Who presumably owes some of that money to something other than business acumen. Mohammed bin Salman, and again, embraced by Trump. He is the current crown prince of a family of such kleptocratic zeal that they've even changed the country they are looting day by day bears their own name. Mm-hmm. We can look around the world and see tensions and geopolitical rivalries and continue to think about the world in the old way. Yeah. But this is very simple. These are alliances of people who are united in what we can call the privatization of power.
And, you know, before we take a short break, one of the things I noticed when I was reading this is that you don't actually mention Trump by name for quite some time. It's hundreds of pages before you actually mention him. You reference some of his actions, but why'd you make that choice?
A lot of people have written books about dirty money, and a lot of them are brilliant, but most of them are very hard to read. And that's for the simple reason that there's a big trap that the kleptocrats set, which is bewildering financial secrecy.
It can be complicated.
It's fantastically complicated, but that to see the complexity is to fall into the trap that they want us to fall into. So I'm just trying to tell the stories about the people who are deep, deep in this world. And actually, Trump was just one avenue for dirty money from the former Soviet Union and elsewhere. To that dirty money, often connected to intelligence agencies in places like Russia. It just so happened that he became president. And so that's why he appears late in the story. And also, you've got to have a few dramatic twists, haven't you?
Of course, of course. You lived in Nigeria for a while, and I want to get into this a bit more when we return. We're going to take a short break. You've compared our upcoming election here in America to those in other countries where, you know, elections are seen by their leaders as kind of an inconvenience. So we'll get some more from you, Tom. I'll find out what you meant by that. We are talking to Tom Burgess. Tom's new book is called Kleptopia: How Dirty Money is Conquering the World. Lots more to chat about. Again, the book is Kleptopia: How Dirty Money is Conquering the World. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is 1A.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or maybe perfect strangers? You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Some days, reading a bunch of headlines just isn't enough. You need to let the news sink in. On Consider This, NPR's new daily news podcast, we can help you do that. Each day, in about 10 minutes, you can find out not just what happened, but why and what it means. Consider This. New episodes every weekday afternoon from NPR.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and we're talking about dirty money. New reporting from my guest Tom Burgess lays out the ways America's legal system, bankers, real estate agents, shell companies, and accountants can turn stolen money into yachts or swanky condos in Manhattan or Miami. Not everyone is happy with the rest of the world seeing us as a money laundering mecca, but lawmakers have struggled to act. From a hearing last year, Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse had this to say to the Senate Judiciary Committee.
The United States is not living up to its reputation as a city on a hill. America too often enables global corruption by allowing the looters the shelter of our rule of law for their ill-gotten gains.
Now, lawmakers here have known about this for years. Tom, how tough is it to change a system that's exploited by kleptocrats?
It's very difficult, Sasha, and I think part of the problem is that we haven't really started, because we are only just waking up to the fact that all that money that the Western democracies, and the US is no exception, my God, the City of London is the capital of this stuff, all the money that the democracies have sucked in that we thought was, you know, maybe smelled bad, but we needed money. We've needed a lot of it since the crisis in 2008. We thought we could live with it. We're now starting to realize what that money brought with it. And what it brought with it was deep and potentially existential threats to democracy. And it brought, most importantly, the what underpins kleptocracies, which is violence.
You write a lot about the failure of those, not just here, but also in London, where you actually make it clear that it's even easier to move dirty money through the system. So is America doing something right?
Well, America is doing something right by being the most beautifully designed, vibrant and dynamic democracy that the world has ever seen. And that makes it the most attractive place to launder your money. Because what the money launderers and the kleptocrats and these corrupt cabals want is the ironclad protection of the rule of law, precisely the protection they deny their own people at home. Now, the US does have a magnificent record on prosecuting foreign corruption. The Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, it's about getting up to 50 years old now, is the most powerful tool anywhere in the world for attacking corruption. And there are people in the former Soviet Union, Nigeria, South America, all over the world,
yeah,
who can thank the Department of Justice prosecutors who use that act to bring down their own kleptocrats and to try and return some of the looted money. But there's a trend, there's a troubling trend. Trump has made no secret of the fact that he despises that act. I think he told Rex Tillerson once that he doesn't see why American companies shouldn't be allowed to go around the world bribing their way to business. So that that spectacular American record is under attack. And is it any secret that it's under attack from a man whose preferred business partners and preferred allies in office are some of the most corrupt people in the world?
Mm-hmm. mentioned Nigeria, and you lived there for a while. So talk about your comparison of the elections. You compared our upcoming election here in America to those in countries like that. You said where elections there are seen by their leaders as an inconvenience. What do you mean?
Right. Well, what I think is this is the moment when that vibrant, astonishing American democracy comes up against the kleptocratic machine. There in 2 months, we'll know how that competition worked. The kleptocratic machine that of which Donald Trump is a creature. The comparison, and I think that the thing that's crucial to understand, and I don't think it crosses the mind of many American voters, because why should it? It never needed to before now, is that in somewhere like Nigeria, a wonderful, beautiful place, full of extraordinary people, the institutions have been completely hollowed out by corruption. Those institutions, which are what keeps America free, their collapse in Nigeria is what traps everybody into poverty and violence. And what that means is the only way to get ahead, really, in Nigeria, is to capture political power and steal. And you steal for yourself and your people. And in that game, you have to take down your enemies. So you find out the secrets of their corruption, and you use a sort of fake legal system, a facade of a legal system, to take down your enemies for their corruption while turbocharging your own. And once you're in that game and go higher and higher up, with some honorable exceptions, the only game in town is maintain public office, because what comes with it, more important even than the ability to steal and dole out contracts to your mates, immunity from prosecution. Now, we look at Donald Trump, candidate for re-election in the US. We know that because he's achieved the highest office in the free world, there's been intense scrutiny by journalists, by investigators, by Mueller, right, of his previous business interests and where the money for that came from. Then there's been intense scrutiny of how he's behaved in a pretty kleptocratic way in office, for instance, keeping that hotel in DC where any kleptocrat can turn up and buy a suite of rooms. If that was happening in Nigeria, we would call that corruption.
Yeah.
And we see now he is doing exactly what an embattled Nigerian or Kazakh or Congolese or Venezuelan kleptocrat would do. Option one, try to win the election by any means. That's push for violence and push to bend the rules and disenfranchise your opponents. But plan B, the nuclear option, is discredit the result. Mm-hmm. If it looks like you can't win, discredit the result. I've seen that again and again and again, covering elections in difficult and dangerous places. And my fear is that is what Trump is trying to do in the States. But what the point I tried to make in Kleptopia in my book is that this is not simply a product of vanity or the lust for power or even Donald Trump's own psyche. It's a bolder and more stark and higher stakes calculation than that. He has seen people around him go to jail for essentially corruption in one form or another. Mm-hmm. Flynn, Manafort, now possibly Bannon, although obviously denies the allegations against him. Mueller, the Mueller investigation seeded smaller investigations at state level all around the country. We've got William Barr furiously trying to shut down these investigations. Donald Trump is behaving precisely like a Nigerian kleptocrat going into an election.
Gotcha. Well, we need to take a quick break, but we have a lot more to talk about with author and journalist Tom Burgess right after this. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as isolation, depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment when you need professional help. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit betterhelp.com/1A to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
Poet Claudia Rankine sought hard conversations about race in unlikely places with friends and strangers.
I see these conversations as trying to have people join the same reality so we can move forward.
Claudia Rankine's new book, Just Us, listen now to the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR.
This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and we're continuing our conversation about kleptocrats and their relationship to America and President Trump. Let's hear from some listeners here. We're getting some emails. Mimi emailed, and she said, "Why have the New York Times and major news stations refused to report on Trump's decades of money laundering for the Russian mob?" Any guesses, Tom?
Well, they have. I mean, brilliant American reporters at the Post and the Times and elsewhere have dug hard into Trump's the money that flows into Trump. But one thing I found, I've been writing stories about this for a long time now, since during the 2016 campaign. And what's very hard is to express the consequences of this and express it in such a way that it makes sense. We can really understand what these money flows mean. And that's one of the reasons why I've written this book, to pull all the threads together and say, actually, even if you set aside all the nitty gritty and all the details of establishing these money flows into Trump, if you pull back and you look at the way he behaves like a member of this committee of kleptocrats that never really needs to meet. They just know they're aligned and they know they have the shared interest of privatization of power. But in answer to the question, there absolutely has been some cracking journalism. I don't think journalists have been shying away. I think they've been fighting hard, but it's ferociously difficult and dangerous work.
And before I move on to, because I want to get to the story I mentioned at the top here that comes from your book, I want to read this email to you from Shegs. They want to ask you about the dirty money for Joe Biden's son Hunter in Ukraine and China.
Yes. Now, that's a fascinating question. So the broader question here, for American politicians who haven't, like Donald Trump, had a career that's been suffused with dirty money, is to what extent is dirty money passing through the kind of influence channels of Washington through lobbyists, through disguised donations, through the kind of stuff that Jay Meyer writes about in Dark Money and so on. And in Biden's case, there is this kind of Ukrainian business interest that his son had. No one has established corruption there, to the best of my knowledge. But we are in this very difficult territory where, in the global economy, people close to senior American politicians want to go out into the world and take business positions. And where is the line between an innocent business venture mm-hmm. and influence trading?
Now, at the top of the show, I mentioned a story about two deaths in a Missouri motel and what ties them to this global kleptocracy that you're writing about. Can you connect the dots for us there?
So, these dots have been buried pretty deep, but this is my best effort to understand them.
All right.
In 2015, in May, two business executives, they were South African citizens, they got on a plane, they flew up to Amsterdam, then they flew into Chicago. They picked up Harley Davidsons and they set off on Route 66, as you said.
Yes.
A few days later, they're found dead in separate hotel rooms in Missouri, in La Quinta Inn, a little place in Springfield. Now, the CDC were given samples, and the CDC said cerebral malaria was present in the samples they received. A lot of people who knew these men have been suspicious throughout, or have been doubtful throughout, that cerebral malaria was really what killed these men, James Bethel and Gerrit Strydom. And one of the reasons that they have concerns is that both of these men had been very, very senior businessmen in a corporation called Eurasian Natural Resources Corporation, which is the target of one of the biggest corruption investigations in the UK. It's been going on for 7 years. Very, very, very serious allegations. I must say, furiously denied by the company and the oligarchs who control it, that bribes were paid to acquire huge mining assets in some of Africa's most repressive kleptocracies, especially Congo and Zimbabwe. Now, what's striking about what's happened in the intervening 5 years is that, first of all, when I was in touch with Springfield Police last year, they told me, oh, we can't give you more information about this investigation because it's still open, which is a strange thing to happen if two people have died of cerebral malaria and that's been announced to the public. Mm-hmm. We were eventually able to get some of the medical records from this case under Freedom of Information, and I showed them to one of the top malaria experts in the UK. And his view is that these men almost certainly did not die of malaria.
Right.
The latest development is that Springfield police told me, we still can't talk to you because the FBI has taken over this investigation. So the vital question now is, what did cause the death of these two men who were potentially very major witnesses in one of the UK's biggest corruption investigations?
Now, Tom, on one level, this can really sound like a murky business story, but you also write about the real danger that folks run into if they speak out, and a very brutal incident in one part of Kazakhstan. Can you tell us more about that?
I certainly can. It's the episode that happens at the very heart of the book. And it's horrendous for me to think about. And I think it's horrendous for people to read about, but we can't turn away from this stuff.
So wrap it up for me briefly in about a minute.
Gladly. What happened was a few oil workers in Kazakhstan, they tried to stand up to the kleptocratic dictator there, just asking for their normal rights, proper wages, proper working conditions. They work close to the Caspian Sea in the desert. The response of that dictator's security forces was to open fire and to torture the survivors in the most horrendous way, to try to doctor the record of what had happened and blame them for it. And the lesson there is that when kleptocracy takes hold, the contract between rulers and ruled breaks down, and all that is left is power through violence.
Susan emails us, isn't Mr. Burgess concerned about his personal safety?
Yep, I am.
You're asking questions about very dangerous people.
Yeah, I have a few sleepless nights, but you know what? The people who are far braver than me are my sources. The people who live in Kazakhstan and Congo, yes, in Washington and in London, who are in great fear, but overcome that fear because this is vital to all our interests that we understand what's going on.
Let's talk briefly about some solutions, Tom. Point me anywhere on the planet where there's enough political will to take on the kleptocrats. And also, just tell me your biggest takeaway from this book.
There isn't enough political will anywhere to take on the kleptocrats yet. But 10 years ago, there wasn't political will to take on climate change because we hadn't started to understand how it's distorting our lives and how it's blighting our children's future. This book is my humble attempt to contribute to that understanding in the hope that political will builds. There are absolutely pockets of it. It needs to connect. And I would say the thing to remember, Nigel is the hero of the book, an ordinary bloke who just would not stop exposing the secrets of corruption, however badly he was treated, however much he was published, he was punished. And it's that spirit of just standing up to these incredibly rich bullies and saying, we will not sacrifice our freedoms.
So the key here is it just really the willingness to admit that companies no longer have a right to keep their money secret?
Sasha, money is a token for society to function. It's become completely detached from its meaning. Richard Dawkins writes about this in The Selfish Gene. Money is just a way for people to interact and share services. It's something that's evolved. It's become detached by its meaning from those who subvert it. We have a right to know the secrets of money, and we must demand that right.
Well, you write about it in your new book. Tom Burgess is an investigative reporter. His new book is called Kleptopia, How Dirty Money is Conquering the World, and it's out today. Tom, we appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's been a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Remember, we're on Instagram. Follow us at The 1A Show. This conversation was produced by Rupert Allman, and our podcast is produced by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you so much for listening, and let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.